This is a replay of the Wednesday night, March 18th WGN show. We started around 11. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, as they did last night, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
Well, I thought it was going to be a whole show. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. It is the final hour of St. Patrick's Day, which we will discuss. And last night when asked, I said, oh yeah, 3 hours, no doubt about it. Should read my email a little more closely. Should read it at all is really the truth, because as you have now become aware, we were delayed by an hour for playoffs. That will not be the case tomorrow night, so it seems. But apologies for that, but we'll catch up in a hurry. I did want to, in the lingering moments of St. Patrick's Day, mention a few things, because, you know, history is rewritten, but you usually don't expect something like this. For one thing, St. Patrick wasn't Irish, and his name was not Patrick. He was born in British Isles, Roman Britain at the time in the 4th century, and his family was well off, and I believe his birth name was Maewyn Suckett, though, don't ask, though he later changed it to Patricius for the Latin word for nobleman. His father was a deacon, his grandfather was a priest, but he wasn't particularly religious, but he was kidnapped by Irish raiders and taken to Ireland, and he was enslaved for years and forced to work as a shepherd and all the harsh conditions and all that stuff. But he's now regarded as the country's patron saint, even though he had to be kidnapped to get there. So, yeah. Now, the other thing is that there's nothing associated with St. Patrick's Day quite like the color green. Yeah, ad nauseum. Well, it turns out that back in St. Patrick's Day, the patron saint color was actually blue. And a shade was known as St. Patrick's Blue in ancient manuscripts and on the robes of Irish kings, and it was the official color of the Order of St. Patrick, an 18th century chivalric order whose knights wore sky blue cloaks. So green, 18th and 19th centuries, due to Ireland's nickname the Emerald Isle and the growing significance of the Shamrock, which was used to explain the concept of the Holy Trinity as far as that goes. But now, here's the deal. St. Patrick didn't drive snakes out of Ireland because there were no snakes in Ireland. And so, none, absolutely. Since the last ice age, the island has been too cold and too isolated for snakes to survive. It's one of the few places in the world that is naturally free of snakes, so driving them out wouldn't be much of a chore, would it? Most historians believe the snakes were euphemistic. They were symbolizing the pagan traditions and beliefs that Patrick worked to replace the pagans and the druids with Christian teachings. So that's what they say. Now, on top of it all, yeah, to add insult to injury, two things. Firstly, the pubs were closed. I mean, what comes to mind when you think about St. Patrick's Day today? And if you don't say green beer within the first three statements, you stayed home. Well, apparently, the idea of the pints of Guinness, green or otherwise, is something new. For centuries, March 17th was dedicated to honoring St. Patrick, and therefore they closed the bars. That's right, they were required by law to close on March 17th to preserve the religious significance. Now, on top of that, the first St. Patrick's Day parade was not in Ireland. It was right here in the good old USA. And apparently that was March 17th, 1601. Not a very well-attended parade, I wouldn't think, because it was in St. Augustine, Florida, what's now St. Augustine anyway. Spanish settlers and Irish clergy organized the first known St. Patrick's Day celebration, And parades in the Northeast are perhaps better known. Boston hosted its first one in 1737 and New York City in 1762, but it all started in Florida. So that's the deal there. All right, so now that you're up to speed on that, we can call it a day, and we'll in less than an hour. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Got all your requests to play, and we'll get to hopefully many of them. Also, had to note the passing. Now, you see, I've told you before, I have no idea what I'm doing. It's people like Carol, the late Carol Ford, who kept me in line. She was so good at show prep. Man, if somebody died, she'd be on the phone within 5 minutes. Hey, died. So it was that, sadly, Carol died last year, and I'm still mourning that. So nobody called me to tell me that Monty Rock died last month, actually. Yeah. And Sir Monty Rock, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or depending on, yeah, he made the numbers up. They would change theoretically. But it was the third when discotheques and the sexolettes. He was actually Joe Montanez Jr. from the Bronx. His family was Puerto Rican. And his parents disowned him for homosexuality when he was pretty much still a child. His primary occupation was hairdresser. In fact, he admitted that though he dabbled in entertainment, he considered hairdressing to be what he did best. And Merv Griffin would agree. No shock there. And apparently, after working for models in the 1960s and being very flamboyant about it, Merv said, "Ah, come on, a show." And so he started to appear on the various talk shows. He was a regularly guest on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. You know, he was probably the first who was famous for being famous. That's right, the Cato Kalin of his day. And he acknowledged the similarity in his act to that of Liberace, who he jokingly claimed stole his act. And apparently Charles Nelson Reilly hated him, and I don't know what the story is there. But some say he was one of the first disco artists to cross into the mainstream, but I use the term artist very loosely, to say the least. It was actually Bob Crewe, and of all people, my eyes get blurry, I like dreaming, Kenny Nolan, there you go, I had to think for a minute. It was Bob Crewe and Kenny Nolan who actually wrote Get Dancin', and it was one of the tracks on his album, along with I Want to Dance With You. Yeah, right. So this was a request we got from Jane in Milwaukee last night for, she said, dance, dance, dance. I think she means get dancing, so that's what we'll play. And as a running gag, he would increment the Roman numeral suffix after his stage name, Monty Rock. And I think the last one was Monty Rock the Sixth. And then he dropped the gag after that. And that's the deal. But we will honor Monty Rock's passing because that happened last month, unfortunately. Yeah, it was a complication from COVID in Las Vegas, February 23rd, 2026. But he made it to 86 years old, so it was a life well lived. He broke a hip a couple of years ago and had been bedridden since then. And his longtime partner, Bruce Moshman, had died over a decade ago now. So the last years weren't particularly kind. So rest in peace, Monty Rock. Yeah, you gave us a lot of humor, whether you were trying to or not. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Don and Beloit, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. When you closed off on Monday, I'm sorry, I might have missed this yesterday, but did you forget to mention the winner, the correct answer for the trivia question, what people do at night?
Yes, I absolutely did. And in fact, it's now a huge embarrassment to me. If you read my website, you know what happened. All right, so...
hold on, time out. So, I think, is your website okay? Because I asked, I naturally went to that initially.
I'm looking at it right now, as we speak.
Oh, okay.
Raleigh.net.
Right, just want to make sure it's okay. Okay, good.
I mean, it's okay as any of the websites I have. I don't have time to do this, so, you know, they're all in various states of disarray, but it's definitely up there. I got to back up and explain. Firstly, the question, on any given night, somewhere between 2,500 and 5,000 Americans are doing this, doing what? That was the question. Okay, fine. Now, but before we talk about the answer, it's important to understand how I get the questions, because almost everything I could possibly ask can be easily searched online, making it almost impossible to find these questions. So coming up with questions that you cannot Google is not easy. And I've exhausted a number of great sources. And one of the commonalities is that most of them were published before you could search for anything. But another is, you know, they're a compendium of offbeat facts. And as you can guess, the problem is the veracity of said facts. And so I try to stick to sources that have quotes as to where they got the information. And so for this particular trivia question, the source was quoted as Hotel Secrets from the Travel Detective. That was Peter Greenberg's book a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
So I figured, come on, Peter Greenberg must know what he's doing. I'll use this. Well, it didn't occur to me to go a little further. And supposedly, the source I was reading quoted Peter's book as saying that on any given night in America, 2,500 hotel rooms were occupied. Now, he's a venerable source, so I assumed it was all there. But the without thinking part, because I went with it without thinking, is what's important, because the answer, sleeping in a hotel room. Now, by the way, I doubled the figure from 2,500 to 5,000 because two people might be sleeping in the same room. And I guess the statute of limitations is up on suing my third grade arithmetic teacher, even if I could recall who that was. And had I thought it through, I would have realized that instead of 2,500, it should have been like 2,500,000, like 2.5 million, which would have been probably closer. So I'm almost positive that that Peter Greenberg never said anything remotely like 2,500. But my source, which I'm not going to identify because I still actually use this, was there. Now, here I was still without thinking when John came right after the show and asked me the answer. And so without thinking, I tell him the answer. And he says, without missing a beat, in his quiet, unassuming way, are you out of your mind? then the error of somebody else's ways started to dawn on me. And bottom line is, even factoring the pandemic, you know, when Oahu had occupancy rates as low as 7%, the result would have been exponentially more than 2,500 occupied hotel rooms. So my profound apologies to it. But even if I said, what are 2.5 million Americans doing on any given night, I doubt you would have come up with sleeping in a hotel room.
Okay. Yeah, like in, you know, Revolutionary War, New York City would have been way more than 2,500.
Well, I'm telling you, when I am prepping these shows, I am doing several things simultaneously, including keeping three radio stations on the air. So, you know, I pick up the book. It's got a source. Okay, fine. Write this down. Don't think about it. Obviously, I didn't think about it, because as soon as John had said that to me, I thought, God. So, yeah, that
was... Well, I'm glad I was able to get your website to open up. For some reason, I wasn't opening up. But that's probably my server. I have too many things open up on my computer. So that's probably why it wasn't working.
Well, what is your computer? So what are you using?
Well, I got a really brand new one, a Dell something. But I literally have probably four dozen Chrome windows open on it at any time.
How much RAM you got?
Oh, it's pretty good. I mean, this is my work computer, and I got a lot of good stuff on it.
Because I sometimes will have as many as 60 open windows. That's why I'm asking you.
Well, it depends on what you do with them. I mean, obviously, if some of them are streaming video or watching some kind of news. Yeah.
But you can't do that simultaneously, so only one of them should be doing that.
And there's so many things I want to save, so it's not good for either of us to like go like a few days or even a week without restarting our computer. So I have to like remember to save certain things and then close it all out and restart it and put it to sleep at night once in a while. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, why don't you tell us about Sirmani Rock? I don't know what. Tell me more. I have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't know about this guy?
No.
Oh God.
No.
Yeah. Like I say, he was a fixture on television shows, the talk shows in the 60s. You know, like Merv Griffin had that show, and then all that. And he was a flamboyant hairdresser, and he was, you know, overtly gay. He was a caricature of a caricature, and he made a good talk show guest. That's why I say famous for being famous. And then as it turned out, Bob Crew and Kenny Nolan got together and wrote an album, basically, for him, Discotex and His Sexolettes. And it's Monty Rock III is who they are. And
Chelsea Records.
Yeah, right. Get Dancin'. Also, I Want to Dance with You. But Get Dancin' was a pretty big hit. And this timing is everything in life. And this is at the time that Studio 54 was really big. And so, this was the deal. And so Rock, he was in Saturday Night Fever. He was the DJ in Saturday Night Fever.
Right.
He's just a caricature of a human being. But, you know, as I say, Puerto Rican from the Bronx, he's 13 years old. He tells his parents he's gay, and they said, get out of the house. And so that's literally what it was. John says, shut up. All right, hang on a minute. Don't go away.
Okay.
And I'll play you Discotex and the Sexolettes, because it sounds like you don't remember this. So we'll review that, and then we'll move on to Huey Piano Smith as well, coming up on WGN Radio. So it was Jane in Milwaukee who called, and actually who wrote, and said, can you play Dance, 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 which is really Get Dancing by a Discotex and the Sexolettes, because Monty Rock died last month. Yeah, sad to note, and happy to play it. But that's it. Reminds me so much of Stickball. And I cannot play Stickball for you, but if you, this was a tape that was going around about 1970. And in fact, when I heard it, I said, that's got to be Monty Rock. And it wasn't. It was a guy named Bruno, or on the label, it said P, period, Vert. So if you've ever heard Stickball, then you know who Bruno was. But Bruno, before he did this this raunchy record, so to speak, had come up with The Beauty of Bruno, where he tries to sound like Tony Bennett, except he cannot sing. In fact, there was one review where the guy said he bleats. And I said, you know, that's probably close. He does, he bleats. All right, so back to Don and Beloit. So, yes, that was Get Dancin'. Now you probably remember it.
Get Dancin', it was like a big hit song. Sure.
Yes, of course it is.
So catchy.
Yes, absolutely. It was a huge hit.
I got to tell you, it reminds me of an episode of The Simpsons. It's featured in as I remember it. I can remember it because I was living on an island in Alaska at the time.
What island? Wait a minute. What island?
Damariscotta, the one Ketchikan. I was wondering Ketchikan.
I didn't think Ketchikan was an island.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's a big island. Yeah, Vancouver.
Yeah, I guess I certainly sucked up a lot of his
British, and he named them after a lot of the British like buddies of his. He named islands after, you know, he kissed up to a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got maybe we could talk about that sometime. Anyway, Simpsons. This is a long, you know, this is a lot of special or something. And they're playing that song, and there's a bunch of people dancing on the screen, and they're doing to that background with the song going and everything. They're doing a salute to the greatest hemisphere of all, the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, very good. Well, see, that's great. It fits.
It's so funny.
Yeah, absolutely fits. So why not? Yeah.
Right. What a character. That sounds really interesting. I was calling just to tell you, I was studying another character as we were talking the other night about Huey Smith and the Clowns. I had no idea about Marvin Marshall. So
oh yeah, but let me go back. I'm still stuck on Ketchikan because I spent a lot of time in Alaska, yeah. And I do not consider Ketchikan. Now, Pennock Island is next to Ketchikan, but Ketchikan is not an island.
Yeah, it's all in it. Yeah.
No. Well, okay. If you're talking huge, you know, I guess technically that's an island, but it's huge. It's not by itself. It's on the coast there.
And then the Misty Fjords or mainland, right. You know, that's like sort of behind it. Yeah.
Right. And Gravina Island across from it and all that, but I just don't normally think about it being an island. But all right. Good enough.
Revilla Gigidio. Revilla Gigidio Island. Gigidio.
Yeah, no, I absolutely know where that is, truth be known. And that I do know, but I always think about Ketchikan, not okay, well. Yeah.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And 176 inches of rain and but it only comes down about 9 months out of the year. They don't have any rain in the summer.
Right. Yeah. Well, not supposed to anyway.
Yeah.
It's been known to do it, but not supposed to. Yeah. All right. Well,
This Huey Piano Smith, really, I'm just so, and when you mentioned that, I had to look it up. So Bobby Marchand, wow, like OMG.
Well, Bobby Marchand, of course, his deal of There Is Something on Your Mind is one of the classic records. And originally it was a serious song by Big J. McNeely. And of course he comes out with, you know what's so hard to be in love, and I can do the whole thing, but you don't want to hear it in any event. But he, you know, I did say he was the lead singer for almost all of Huey Piano Smith's stuff, which is true.
Yeah.
But I forgot about Scarface, and I was thinking about this after the show. And because this was one of those legendary deals where Huey Piano Smith normally would use, what's his name?
John Scarface Williams.
Well, but he wouldn't normally use him to sing. He was in the band, but he wouldn't use him. He would always use Bobby Marchand. But what happened was on that particular session, and Huey Piano Smith did not like to sing. He could, but he didn't like to. So he, for whatever reason, and Bobby Marchand was slated to do the lead, but bottom line was that, you know, Huey Piano Smith said to Scarface, "Lean in closer. You know, I'm trying to get a hit." And so, Bobby Marchand is right there, but the voice you're hearing is John. And it was Johnny Vincent from Ace who produced that record, obviously. But Scarface was 18 at the time. And so it was just one of those typical sessions. And he's lean in closer. I remember that story. And got a gold record. John was in the band for years, but I couldn't think of anything else that he did. He did lead on that I liked. He did a number of things, but and he contributed to "Don't You Just Know It," though he's really not the star vocalist. But there are so many great Huey Piano Smith records, and of course we normally think of "High Blood Pressure" or "Don't You Just Know It" or one of those. But have you heard "Having a Good Time" or "Little Chicky Wawa"?
I wanted to play Chickiwawa sounds really cool. I was going to ask you to play that.
I will play that as the next break. Little Chickiwawa is something I play all the time. Yeah. And, the deal is, Bobby Marchand was, and you've heard There's Something on Your Mind, I'm sure. You've heard him do that record, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, okay. So he used to perform that at the Dewdrop Inn. And the Dewdrop Inn was this legendary drag club in New Orleans. Little Richard and everybody else, and Scarface used to hang out there as well. But what's sad, and if you read about him, is he was stabbed to death in front of a different club there, like 1972, and that was it. He was young at the time.
I thought you and the listeners might find, I found it really cool, this place called 64parishes.org.
Yeah.
And it's got a heck of a great summary of this amazing, this is the irrepressible Bobby Marchand. This guy just kept reinventing himself.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up with new stuff. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he was the best.
The life he lived.
Yeah.
And so at the top, I got to tell you this, Raleigh, at the top, they got this Tipitina's Carnival Time,
right.
This weekend show poster from 1979. I looked it up, and the dates are correct. It's Friday, Saturday weekend.
Sure.
Oh, my God. It's the Lasty Brothers Band, Al Johnson, Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns, yeah. Bobby Marchand, Jerry Hall, John Foose. But it also says Professor Longhair,
right.
The Neville Brothers, right. Radiators, Earl King, the Nighthawks.
Yeah.
Like, wow, there's just... That Tipitina's and what 501 Napoleon Avenue.
Yep, it is.
Yep,
it was.
That's just. Could you imagine going to a show like?
Oh
that?
Yeah, wow. No. I mean, the Vocal Ray was like that, and even though it was touristy, you would occasionally, hit those nights where it was just spectacular.
So, I have to admit that. I had friends that would always go down there and stuff, and I'd always hear about, oh, yeah, we got to go down there, and I just didn't really understand the draw until I checked it out a couple of Christmases ago, and I went there for Christmas.
It's changed so much, though. It was something else.
Yeah.
I just cry thinking about it, but New Orleans in the late 50s and throughout the 60s, even in the 70s, was just a great time. And as I've also talked about before, used to be that New Orleans had the highest percentage of black home ownership in America, which is why they didn't have riots. They didn't burn down their own property. But now you look at it, you look at some of these wards, you look at some of this and say, how the hell did this happen? Because it wasn't like that. And so...
It was marginal stuff, and the marginal parishes were the worst ones that unfortunately got hit the hardest in Katrina.
Well, and that was, of course, much later. But even before that, you were seeing a real change, and you say to yourself, how is this happening? And, drive down Gentilly or whatever. And I don't know. I've never known the real answer to that, but it was very different in 1964 than 1984, let alone 94. So, yeah.
Well, I love your eclectic stuff that you listen to, and I really appreciate what you're playing. And
all
everything.
Right. Well,
so,
you'll hear Little Chickiwawa next, coming up.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate
it. Thanks talking to you.
All right. Bye-bye. Likewise.
When you told me that you love me, did you mean a word? When you told me that you love me, everybody heard. We're alone, just me and you. Tell me, Chickiwawa, what you gonna do? Sitting in the movie, we sure had some fun with popcorn, candy, and a chewing gum. Now that we're alone, just me and you. Tell me, Chickiwawa, what you gonna do? Mary Jane's party, we sure had a ball. Grandma peeping, walking up and down the hall. Alone, just me and you. Tell me, Chickiwawa, what you gonna do?
Hey!
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Huey Piano Smith playing piano on that, doing a wonderful job. When that came out on Ace, it wasn't as Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns. It was as you and Jerry, and Jerry was Jerry Byrne. And I thought that was a great song. And when I heard the gal in the background, it reminded me of so many New Orleans records that were just wonderful for that. And the one that always comes to mind is Jesse Hill, of course, who I think was a god for Ooh Pooh Padoo, the absolute best as far as that goes. But his version, I shouldn't say his version, I'm not sure anybody else ever did it, but if you haven't heard it, Jesse Hill doing the Pots on Strike.
I don't know what's wrong with my wife. She ain't been acting right. Came in hungry and I could be. She hollered, "Stop!
The pot's on a strike."
I got mad and lost my cool. She must think I'm a fool. You ain't even swept the floor. She hollered, "Stop!
The broom's on a strike."
Wait a minute, baby.
It's just a wonderful little song. The Pot's on a Strike, and I have absolutely no idea who the gal is as far as that goes. So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, we have Tom, and Tom is in Johnsburg. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
Hey, Tom.
I had called you last week about the monovision.
Yes, we talked.
With cataract surgery. Yep. I talked to my doctor today, and he didn't seem to understand what I was trying to explain my concern. More so I'm seeing at night when you look at, like, the red and green, the stop and go lights, where I see, when I look out, I see the light, and then I see like a halo refraction,
yeah,
as if you see it adjacent to the left,
yeah,
of the light.
Right, right. But what
now,
just to
recap.
Wait a minute. Hang on. When you told me about that, I told you that is not about the surgery. That's about the cataract in your right eye. When you saw the light,
can you talk louder or something? I'm not hearing you.
I don't know how to talk louder. As far as that goes.
Okay.
So what is it, John? John came in here. We're in the news. Oh, great. All right, hang on. Don't go away.
Knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong and still think that it's alright. Think of what I'm saying. We can work it out and get it straight or say goodnight. We can work it out. We can work it out. Life is very short.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. And that's Stevie Wonder. And it was, Gloria and Maddie in Harwood Heights wanted to hear that. And now they have 1971 on Tamla. Happy to play that. During the news, I was looking up some stuff. Oh, always a danger. And because I still want to know on that Jesse Hill record, the pot's on a strike. Who's saying that? And so, man, I tell you, this is where you know that AI has gone to hell. Knows absolutely nothing about obscure R&B or soul. Guaranteed. So I've been led down so many wrong paths. So I'll look it up, and sure enough, it's got an answer. Right, I asked a question, I want an answer. It doesn't have to be the right one, just an answer. And they mentioned how it was recorded at Matassa Studio in New Orleans, that I know, and that Alan Toussaint produced it and was on Joe Manischek's Minute. We know all that stuff. And then, so by the way, that lures me into a false sense of security because that's all accurate. Then I get to, Regarding the female voice singing on The Pot's on a Strike, the identified voice belongs to Lois Nelson Andrews, often referred to as Lois Nelson, a notable New Orleans figure who was married to Jesse Hill at the time. You probably have never heard of Lois Nelson, and she was really big with Mardi Gras, head of a crew and everything. But if you had, you would know that she would have been 9 at the time that song was out. And not only that, she was not Jesse Hill's wife at any point, but she was his daughter. All right, so it's not Lois. I don't know who it is, but I know who it's not. All right, now back to Tom in Johnsburg, who went back to the eye doctor. He's thinking about having cataract surgery on his right eye. He did it on his left eye already, and he mentioned that he's looking at lights at night and he's seeing the halos and the double vision. And as I was saying, Tom, that's a function of the fact you've got the cataract in the right eye. If you shut the right eye entirely, you shouldn't see any of that. So that's not what.
And I don't.
All right. So there you go. So that's not even a question. The question for monovision, though, is very different. It's at what level do you want to see things? And that's what you were going to discuss with the doctor, did you?
And I did that, too. But here's I told him that already, that because I already told him, I actually measured it. I says, I'm looking at 19 inches because I want to see my phone.
Okay.
And it uses about 19 inches away from me, is comfortable for me, so I'm not holding it right now. I'd be holding up to my face like 4 inches away.
Okay.
To see it. So he would correct it for that. I also have an astigmatism in that eye as well.
Right. Well, that's why you're going to do a toric lens.
What I'm saying is, now, as I did another test, because he didn't seem to understand what I was saying about the light, you know, that you said, like the double vision coming from the right eye, that, you know, if you keep both eyes open right now and I'm looking out at the road and then you see, say, for example, the stoplight, I'm seeing like an extra ring.
Correct. That's because of the cataract in the right eye.
Okay, but here's the thing. Now, I also brought my glasses, my distance glasses, with me and put them on and
it
closed my left eye.
It wouldn't matter.
And that ring kind of went away.
Well, it went away because you weren't using two eyes at the same time.
Right. Okay. So what's going to happen with the surgery? Because I'm going to have it adjusted so that I can see and read paper and read my phone at 19 inches away.
You should not have any.
Except for at night is when I see these rings.
You should not. You should not be seeing the rings. And as I say, that's...
Why couldn't he get that? And he's like, well, we can't guarantee how you're going to see.
Well,
I'm not an engineer.
Right, because they can't guarantee that. But if you're not comfortable with where he wants to set the diopters, and that's what you're talking about, how nearsighted you'll be in that eye to produce the results you want. If you're not comfortable with what you're getting, go to another doctor.
I'm not following what you're saying.
What I'm saying is you're going in there and you're saying, hey, I want to see, when I'm looking with both eyes, I want to be able to see 19 inches in front of me. That's my sweet spot. He should be able to understand
that. And he said he could do that.
All right,
he can get within like 2 inches, like an inch here or there, based on the lens.
All right. Well, that's...
But what I'm saying, that's all fine during the day or
it's not
night.
It's not going to be a factor. What you're experiencing now, it's not going to be a factor.
Driving on the road, looking at those lights.
You will not be seeing that. Now, if you were...
You won't see that extra ring.
No, you will not.
Sometimes it's adjacent to it or right around.
That's a function of the cataract. No, you won't see that. But now, if you were going to go with the lenses that, in fact, allow you to see at all different levels, you know, those lenses...
No, I didn't even go to that.
Right, you would, because that's a side effect of those. You still see that glare and all that. But no, you should not worry about that.
Well, I don't understand why he wasn't really understanding me.
Well, I can't tell you other than it could be the way you explained it, but he should know that anybody with cataracts has the propensity to have that double vision situation. The halos.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do know exactly.
And I'm explaining it clear enough to you.
Yes. Well,
and when I put my glasses, I even told you, like, I closed my left eye, and I put my glasses on for the right eye.
Yes, but you won't
see further
distance. You and you,
I don't see that ring.
Of course you don't, because the ring is a function. You have to have both of your eyes simultaneously looking, and the eye with the cataract is giving you that problem. But if you shut the other eye, you don't see it. It's just like if you have double vision and you shut one eye, you no longer have double vision.
Okay, so but the correction that I'm going to get to the 19 inches away from my face
should have no
effect. You know, to read print and stuff will not affect it anymore either.
Right.
It's the cataract that's doing it.
Correct. Correct.
Why couldn't it be so simple for him to like say, like you're saying it? Like if you were my doctor, I'd be, okay, great. Let's do it.
I don't know. All I can say is if you're uncomfortable with the answers you get, you find another doctor.
Well, he wants to schedule this for next Monday.
Well, it's
he's
up to you. It's up to you if you want to do it at all. So don't just because he wants
to. Is he not comprehending what I'm saying in some sense? He seems like he did a great job in the other eye.
And he may be perfect. All I'm saying is, and this is just general information, obviously I'm not your doctor, I'm not there, I don't know. But I'm saying that if anybody is not comfortable with the answers they're getting from a doctor, it's always prudent to seek other opinions from other doctors. Now, if you are comfortable and you're saying, hey, he did a good job, I'm comfortable, then go for it. But just because he wants to schedule it doesn't mean you want to schedule it. You're in charge.
Should I call him again? No, at the office?
No, it has. He gave you the answers. If you're comfortable with setting it up, do it. If you're not comfortable with setting it up, find someone else.
Well, I don't understand what you're saying. If I'm comfortable, I don't know why he can't explain it the way
Well, for whatever reason. And if you wanted, you could go in there and you could say like that. Are the halos and the mirror images, is all that a function of the cataract? And he should be able to say yes. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, because you're saying, because I just told him this only happens at night.
Well, of course. Of course. Well, you don't have to be driving.
And you're looking at like stoplights, street
yes,
lights,
correct.
And you see those halos.
It's well known. You know, you can also Google this online. I wouldn't look at the AI definitions, but in general, you'll see there's tons of YouTube videos. I mean, tons of YouTube videos about cataract surgery, some of them discussing exactly this.
And so here's the other thing. When I told him about where I see a reflection from the left eye, which is the dominant eye that's already corrected for the distance, he said, that's normal. Your brain may take a while for that to go away. That's a reflection off the lens out of the corner of the eye because of the way his lens is made.
I can't speak to that.
Like you'll see like only when you have a light, I should say it, describe it more that when the light is above you,
mm-hmm.
And you have like more of a clear light, and you're like, say, you're just looking up towards the TV, you'll see like a reflection, a flicker, and it's not the eye flickering, it's only when you're seeing it catch the corner of your eye. I mean, yeah. I could turn my eye, and even the other assistant said that that's common.
Okay, see,
he said that. Like,
and it may be. I can't speak to it. Not
okay,
in my field of
experience.
Okay,
but that other thing with the cataracts, once you remove the cataract,
yeah,
you should not get those halos that I'm talking about. I don't know how other way to explain it to you if I'm explaining it right.
No, absolutely you're explaining it right as far as I'm concerned.
So then there shouldn't be a problem with what he's
going to do. I don't think so.
But yet he's, you know, when he kind of came back was, you know, your eyes, like, he kind of explained, like, I can't guarantee something. Well, none of them are going to guarantee anything.
Well, no, but nobody can guarantee anything, but the
you can't guarantee what you see,
right,
but I'm explaining what I'm seeing
right
now.
The halos are common with a multifocal lens. You're not getting a multifocal lens. So when you're not getting a multifocal lens, if you have halos or whatever, that's a very temporary side effect.
It's from the cataract.
Well, what you're seeing now is from the cataracts, yes. But even after they put in an IOL, you might temporarily see things. There's a healing process, obviously. You want to wait until
the
swelling's going to...
Yeah, the toric lens that they're putting
right,
in,
right?
Right,
they're doing the toric because, of course, you've got astigmatism, and that's why they do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even so. I talked to an
Now, there's another thing, too, and I don't know if he's told you this, but...
What?
You mentioned you had had prior refractive surgery, that you had had vision correction surgery.
Yes,
like LASIK.
I had LASIK, yes.
Anybody who's had LASIK or RK is more prone to these visual issues. So the mismatch between the lens and the corneal shape can lead to glare and halos to a degree. So, but he's aware that you've had LASIK surgery.
Yeah.
So hopefully he is taking...
He knows that.
Yeah, so he is taking that into account. But it's not unusual that prior refractive surgery will produce the halos and the glare and all that that you would see at night. And for most people, other than with multifocal lenses, they're temporary.
Yeah, this is just one eye for the distance and the other one for the close-up.
Right.
And he said, yes, you still may need one for the computer.
Well,
because that's an in-between.
Okay, well, you decide where you want that sweet point, and if you know you want it at 19 inches, he should be able to get it close.
That's what I want, because I figure I'm with my phone more and I'm driving more. Especially during the day, I don't see any issue that would be if he can get it to that.
Okay.
With the computer, I can get a pair of glasses if I have to for reading the computer when I'm at home.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if I should call him again and try to re-explain it. Or...
Well, I don't know what you want him to say.
Oh, so is it? I want him to kind of respond like the way you do, said it's the cataracts that's doing the halo.
Well, if you ask him directly, is it the cataracts that are doing the halo, he should be able to say yes or no. And if he says no, then you say, then what would it be? And let him explain it.
Okay, I'll do it that way. I'll remember exactly how you have it here.
Yeah, and see what he says. But it's not. This is so common. That's why I say it.
That's why I'm like, I don't understand his.
Well, he's probably just not thinking about it that way. But as I say, I would be more concerned about your previous LASIK surgery, and I'd talk to him about that. Say, hey, with the LASIK surgery, is that going to affect some of these images after the fact? And he can tell you.
Okay, but I'm going to start with that halo with the cataracts.
Go for it.
Yeah. So I just said he's doing it like, you know, he's going to order the lens for Monday next week already.
Well, again, that's fine that he's doing all that, but ultimately, as a patient, you are in charge. And if you're comfortable, great. If you're not comfortable, you tell him, hey, whoa, Nelly, we're going to do this when I'm ready. I'm not ready, if that's the case. In other words, don't let someone tell you when to do something.
I'm not telling him when to do it. I'm just, like, not getting the fact that he's not responding like you did and the other optometrist.
Yeah.
And you're not an optometrist.
No, I'm about
it.
Far from it as you're going to get. Yeah. Well, good luck. Let me know.
All right.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, frustration. I understand that. 888-876-5593. But, a physician can and should suggest. But that's the operative word there, suggest. Ultimately, the patient makes the final decision, as far as I'm concerned, on anything. And that is not particular to any situation. It's just a general rule of thumb. You are in charge. It is your body. And ultimately, it is you who will live with the results, good, bad, or indifferent. We got Brian and Seneca, who's got a request. Hey, Brian, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Great to talk to you, Raleigh. Before the request, just one little bit of Chicago-based trivia. The Hilton Chicago on Michigan Avenue was originally built as a Stevens Hotel.
Okay.
The son of the builder of the Stevens Hotel was John Paul Stevens, the Supreme Court judge.
Okay.
The Stevens Hotel's claim to fame when built was that it had 3,000 rooms.
Uh-huh.
The Hilton Hotel knocked that down to just under 2,000 because the smallest of the rooms were no longer big enough to use as, you know, for a Michigan Avenue motel. So, that's a statistic they fed you.
Yeah. That's why I say, if I even thought about it, and I'm aware of that, I know the old pictures of the Stevens, and it was a behemoth, that's for sure, just huge. So, I am an idiot. I've proven it. So, for anybody listening, consider that if you're going to take my advice.
You're not an idiot. It's just that nobody knows everything, and sometimes you get caught up just a little bit.
Well, I don't have the time for this, is really the truth. And lately, I have had less and less time. And so that's what, leads to all sorts of problems, not only on this show, but in other ways as well, is that I'm trying to do too many things at one time in a short period of time. And some of the results are calamitous. Let's just say that.
Okay. Well, the request I had from last week, I had two of them, but the bigger one was Wes Montgomery's 4-on-6.
Yes, I have that written down. So I just haven't played it yet, but I have that written down, and you will hear that.
Great.
All right, thanks. I appreciate you. Also had Over the Rainbow, I know, by our Hawaiian friend. So I haven't forgotten you yet.
Yes.
Okay, Brian, I promise. Maybe tomorrow night.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. So, 888-876-5593. Yeah, even John said, I'm worried about you. I said, you're worried about me. I'm worried about me. What, are you kidding me with that? All right, we'll get to Jim in New Hampshire. All right, Sydney in Chicago's got a request, and James on the South Side has stories, and there's room for you, too, on WGN Radio. Well, it looks like fate is intervening on that one. That was going to be Cindy's request, actually. Me and the man on the moon. Yeah, well, all right, that's okay. I will move back. I've got several others from which to choose to one of Don from Beloit's requests for 3220 Blues.
I sent for my baby and she don't come. I sent for my baby and she don't come. All the doctors in hot springs sure can't help her, no. And if she gets unrooted, things she don't want to do. If she gets unrooted, things she don't want to do. Take my 3229, cut her half in two. She got a 30 special, but I believe it's most too light. Got a 30 special, but I believe it's most too late. I got a 3220, got to make the camps all right. I sent for my baby man and she don't come. I sent for my baby man and she don't come. All the doctors and hot springs sure can't help her no. I'm gonna shoot my pistol, gonna shoot my Gatling gun. I'm gonna shoot my pistol, got to shoot my Gatling gun. You made me love you, now your man have come. Oh, baby, why you stay last night? Ah, baby, why you stay last night? You got your hair all tangled and you ain't talking right.
WGN Radio. There you are. I promised I'd play for Don and Beloit Robert Johnson and his version of 3220 Blues. Not the only guy who recorded it, of course, but that one came out. I don't remember the label now. That's terrible. And on shellac, obviously. So indeed. All right. Well, 888-876-5593. And now, yeah, we failed Cindy at her first request. I'm going to figure out why that didn't work, but find out what she wants to hear next. So what is it, Cindy?
Well, I have a request. I don't know if you would play it, but it's a sad, you know, probably the saddest song from the 70s. And it's just for everyone who lost family and a lot of people. It's just that, you know,
what's the song?
Alone Again.
Oh, naturally, sure. Gilbert O'Sullivan, sure.
Yeah, I found four of my cousins passed away this past year. Mm. And I just found out that the one cousin, she was an RN, and she was about the most stable one. And she pretty much had a brain, like some kind of brain aneurysm, like mm-hmm. 30 years ago.
Okay.
And she wasn't right ever since then, but before then she was about the most stable cousin, and I found out she passed. I don't know, I'm just like the last, you know, one of the last ones left out of our, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, that's time marches on, and that's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, none of us are getting any younger, And so, yeah, the older we are, the more people leave us. It's absolutely true. And I don't know how you really prepare for that, because everybody who thinks they're prepared when they have another loss finds out they aren't. So other than just intellectually understanding that that's how it works.
When I was in fifth grade, my cousin was murdered a day. He was in California. He came home from, Nam. And he was murdered in the commissary point blank from a 45 a day before he was to come home.
Wow. Yeah, that's fate. Survive Vietnam and don't survive the commissary.
Yeah, I don't know what, I guess he wore his uniform or something, and someone was saying, I'm going to send you home in a body bag, and that was it.
Yeah, and that's horrifying. But unfortunately, the older we get, the more we hear those stories, because it does happen. Hopefully not too often, but it does happen.
No. Oh, and then today, I was almost in a horrific accident on Forest Reserve Drive.
What happened?
Some horrible young girl in a red car pulled out right in front of me when I was on Forest Reserve Drive without even looking, and if it wouldn't have been me driving, somebody else would have slammed right into her. I just automatically, calmly put on the brake, and that was it.
Right. Well,
and I missed by about a foot.
That's the way to drive. Drive like they're all homicidal murderers and blind out to get you.
That's and my, my dad. I have my dash cam. Mm. So I could have proved what she did,
Doesn't matter. You're safe, and God knows what's happening to her, and who cares? But, defensive is the way to be.
If she doesn't straighten up her driving, what a horrible girl.
Not your problem, and you're safe.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, yeah.
Well, good deal. Well, I will play Gilbert O'Sullivan for you next.
Okay,
bye-bye. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, because Cindy's had several requests. I don't know what happened to Me and Man on the Moon. I even had that queued up as Shellac, and it went absolutely nowhere. Nowhere, I tell you. All right, so Stacy in Algonquin, welcome back to WGN Radio. Stacy. Oh, we lost Stacy. All right, Stacy. I understand. Sleep is sacred. James on the South Side has stories. You with us, James?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
How are you?
Well, I'm here. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
Yay, I like to hear that.
Okay.
So what you got?
Okay, I'm holding it close because for some reason this phone isn't acting right.
Really? What's wrong with it?
I don't know. People tell me, okay, oh, now I can hear you. They'll say, when I hold it real close, I said, okay, well, it's not like, it's not like a landline,
right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. You're so right. Yes, and thanks for the many, many stories, including McDonald's taking the entire German nation to court. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, that one, and I'm like wondering, McDonald's, it's bad enough that your CEO is being lampooned for his tiny bite of it's a pretty good sandwich.
Well,
I tried the Big Arch.
Well, in this
case, it's a good sandwich.
In this case, it's not about what's in the packaging; it's the packaging itself. And
and also being more expensive than a double quarter pounder. I gotta admit that was a hard pill to swallow.
So what happened here in Germany was a town decided that they were going to have a fee for any non-disposable takeout item, pretty much, and McDonald's didn't comply. So what they tried was they wanted a small fee on every piece of throwaway packaging sold at any restaurant or any cafe, burger wrappers, plastic forks, whatever, 50 cents per container, 20 cents per piece of cutlery, and, reasonable. And so McDonald's said, we're just not going to do that. And they fought it all the way to the highest court, and the highest court disagreed twice in a row. And the reason that they did was what was interesting. The rulings, which after this one little little town did this. A lot of other German cities followed their lead. And what they discovered was that with the fee, the use of reusable containers and the littering and all that just absolutely dropped to a fraction of what it was before. And on top of that, the money that is collected for this has raised over €1 million to do street cleaning and waste programs. And so the bottom line is it's working for the cities. So I have no problem.
Yeah.
With that. And I don't understand why McDonald's would think it was worth fighting. Yeah. Yeah. So good for them. Yeah. So, and bad for McDonald's.
Mm-hmm, because, yeah. And like when I think about where you see stuff littered around here, you say, couldn't we do better?
Well, I don't know. Not going to make it political, but in this case, it really kind of supersedes politics. It's really about something that was very effective all the way around, and McDonald's didn't have a leg to stand on. And so, good for the countries. So we also have smuggling, and normally I ignore smuggling because after all that starts to get political. And we have a Chinese national who was smuggling 2,000 of them. It's what he was smuggling that was interesting. He was smuggling queen ants from Kenya. And so apparently 2,000 queen garden ants. Firstly, the first thing I'd think is, how the hell do you smuggle 2,000 ants? And apparently you do it on consignment. And the live ants were in luggage bound for China. And so apparently the reason that this is an issue, I found this interesting, is you just never know. I don't think about ants one way or another. But apparently they're protected by international biodiversity treaties. And their trade is highly regulated. So Kenya Wildlife has warned of growing demand for garden ants, the Messer cephalotes, in Europe and Asia, where collectors are keeping them as pets. You know, your life has really had to devolve to problems if you think ants are pets. But there you go. And I will say the one thing about ants is they're very inquisitive. And I found this out years ago when I was spreading someone's remains. And the next day I went to the site and it was just loaded with ants. And I thought, oh my God. And a friend of mine who at the time was a chemical engineer at MIT said, no, it's not about what you spread. They're just naturally curious. You invaded their domicile and they're checking it out. And so it lasted a couple days, and the ants left, and the remains stayed, and that was the end of that story. But apparently, I'm not sure why the queen ants are in such demand, but apparently Kenya has sentenced 4 men to a year in prison for trying to smuggle live queen ants out of the country. So,
but I gotta admit that when you think about them being pets,
That's
a little strange.
Well, the four guys who went to jail used as a defense to the court that they were collecting them as a hobby. They didn't think it was illegal. No. Well, I didn't think it was illegal either, but I can't imagine collecting ants as a hobby. Now, the interesting thing is this law was not devised for the ant. This law was devised for things like elephants or lions, you know, not ants. But apparently, the ants seized last year were giant African harvester ants, which are ecologically important, says Kenya, noting the removal from the ecosystem could disrupt soil health and biodiversity. So apparently, the intended destinations were exotic pet markets. You know, what has to be wrong if the only pet you can think of is an ant?
I am curious about that. I gotta admit. Maybe somebody like Mr. Spock would find that very fascinating.
Yeah. So I guess why not? And then Chicago's first automotive restroom. What? So he sent me this article, and all I'm doing is saying what? Automated public restroom coming to Wicker Park. So not automotive, but automated. A self-cleaning public restroom is coming to a Wicker Park intersection. And of course, you hear self-cleaning public restroom and you say to yourself, what could possibly go wrong? And apparently the first standalone automated self-cleaning restroom will be installed at the Polish Triangle in Milwaukee, Ashland, and Division intersection above the Division Blue Line station. And so they're developed by some company that provides street furniture like bus shelters normally. No additional details. I'm not 100% sure how this works.
I really don't know myself, but I got it. Okay, I know that people are going to have already got the punchline joke for it. We will not repeat it.
Yeah, right. Well, right. And you know, I guess they just mean the bowls themselves. Because they're saying, well, they have two toilet bowls. One is pre-cleaned and ready for use, and a second spins behind a wall to be cleaned for the next use. And a low spray of water cleans the floor and quickly dries for the next user. And it's free. So if you're near that intersection, I guess you can check it out. Apparently, the First Ward's annual menu funds are paying for this. They've allocated $315,659 for the costs, and some funds will also be spent on the project from the 2026 program. All right. Well, I hope that if it's not you, that somebody listening checks this out. I can't imagine.
Yeah. But I got to admit that you always hear about people saying, oh, where's the restroom? Where's the restroom?
And then,
if you go into the restaurant, hey, you got to buy something.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. Businesses more and more saying for paying customers only, and I get that. So for many people, it's like, where do we go? And so I get that. And unfortunately, with most public restrooms, they look and smell like it. You know, they're not clean. And so the idea of having clean restrooms. So we understand the flushing and we understand the spraying, but we don't understand how they're going to get rid of the paper waste. Those towels you drop on the floor, those sheets of toilet paper that don't make it to the bowl. What is that? I don't know. Somebody will have to let us know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I was going to mention about, and this is maybe slightly older, every U.S. Olympian got a little money.
With $200,000, whether they got a medal or not, thanks to a billionaire's generosity. That's absolutely true. And yes, this was a little older. This came out in late January, but it was an amazing use of. It was a guy named Ross Stevens who apparently is giving $200,000 to every U.S. Olympian and Paralympic athlete, regardless of if they win, to help them gain financial security. Good for him. And I think it's wonderful. He donated $100 million to the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee for the program in 2025, largest gift in their history. And that was great. Absolutely great. When you've got that kind of money, putting it to that kind of use is very laudable.
Yeah. And at least they have something. I mean, it's really nice in that respect. Oh, and I think, let's see, who was it? They there was some story supposed about a McDonald's that had gone, at least a group of McDonald's had gone, years where supposed employees were doing human trafficking.
Oh, God. Just horrifying.
We won't go with
right.
that.
The story that I did like, though, was that feel-good moment of the elk playing soccer with the kids. And that was
good.
Kids are playing soccer in the driveway. A wild elk walks up, joins the game, and passes the ball back. That's great.
Yeah.
That
kind of gets all the stories I have at the moment. But I'll find a few more.
Oh, yeah. No, but that was good. And that was a feel-good story because the boys were very respectful of wildlife, and the wildlife was very gentle with the boys. So it was one of those meeting of the minds that was a truly nice experience. Yes.
Yeah, and it's too bad there isn't more of that.
I agree. Well, I guess we have to get to the Elks Union to see what's going on. All right. Well, great to talk to you, and thank you.
Okay. Take care.
All right. You too.
Okay. Well, it's getting warmer where you are.
We're
going to get some of that heat.
Well, we're getting 105 tomorrow. You can have half of it. All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. We're not pleased about that, to say the least. All right. So 888-876-5593. And yes. Alone Again Naturally for Cindy is coming up next on WGN Radio.
while from now, if I'm not feeling any less sour, I promise myself to treat myself and visit a nearby tower. And climbing to the top, will throw myself off in an effort to make clear to whoever what it's like when you're shattered, left standing in the lurch at a church where people were saying, my God, that's tough, she stood him up. No point in us remaining, we may as well go on, as I did on my own, alone again, naturally. To think that only yesterday I was cheerful, bright and gay, looking forward to wouldn't do the role I was about to play. But as if to knock me down, reality came around, and without so much as a mere touch, cut me into little pieces, leaving me to doubt. Talk about God in His mercy, if He really does exist, why did He desert me in my hour of need? I truly am indeed alone again.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that certainly is a song that stirs up controversy. People either love it or they hate it. And Paul McCartney had said he wishes he wrote it. So Gilbert O'Sullivan, Alone Again, naturally, that, of course, is for Cindy. So the evening has gone so fast. And so the first thing I want to say is tomorrow I really am on for 3 hours. There's no game. I checked it. Well, I don't know for sure, but I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a game. I can't find a game. So I will assume with no game. So first thing I'll say to Jim in Vermont, will you call me back tomorrow night?
Sure, no problem.
I will look forward to that. I want you to do that, so don't forget.
I will.
Okay, thanks.
I will.
All right, yeah. And in the waning 30 seconds, that belongs to Stacy, who called back, who's got a request. All right, Stacy, what do you want to hear? Stacy.
Raleigh?
Yes. What do you want to hear?
Raleigh?
Yes, what do you want to hear?
Did you ever play any of my requests?
Yes, I did. I played a few of them.
Well, how come when people just call in and they have a request, you play that right away?
No, sometimes I do. Like, well, Lou Rawls I won't, because it's hard for me to find Lou Rawls stuff that I haven't played that I like. So sometimes I do, and sometimes it takes weeks. But I played your Lou Rawls, and I played your Delphonics. But I'll be happy. Your James Brown, I don't think I got to. But the other two, I definitely did. And just for that, I will play you something tomorrow night. One of those three, I promise.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Show's over. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. So, sometimes things do come up. And, of course, if I really like them, I'm willing to stop what I'm doing to play them. Yeah, because it makes me feel good. All right. But otherwise, unless I absolutely hate it, I will be playing it. And John says, just shut up. So we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. We'll do it again 21 hours from now. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.
Pluck Mangione, plus Arrow Aggressor Arrested, and Big Bang Benefactors. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Real news, real stories, real fun. Pizza order in the court, heinous slays pizza bust. The flim flam phony who feds say fudged his way into lockup posing as a G-man with a court order to spring alleged assassin Luigi Mangione is a pie-slinging piece of work. Prison fake nailed with his pizza cutter and a fork by Brighouse Brass actually slung pepperonious pies at a joint in the Bronx before he got fired after brandishing a BB gun there, feds say. Fly like a weasel is now in the same clink as his claimed cold-blooded cult hero. Crossbow court chaos. Suburban silence shattered when a bolt-blasting belligerent allegedly unleashed a medieval-style missile at a startled neighbor in quiet Long Island, New York. Police say the rage-rattled resident raised a crossbow, fired a fast-flying shaft, and struck his stunned target before fleeing. Officers quickly cornered and cuffed the culprit without chaos. Prosecutors now say the arrow-slinging aggressor faces attempted murder counts. Turns out in modern New York, bringing ancient weapons to neighborhood grudges won't win wars. It just wins wrist cuffs. Sitcom star savior, Big Bang Theory star Kunal Nuyar secretly settles staggering medical bills for stunned strangers. The actor who played Raj Kutrapali during the hit series' entire run and boasts a booming $45 million fortune quietly covered crushing costs, rescuing relatives from financial freefall. Families say the star's compassion cleared catastrophic care charges without fanfare. In a celebrity sphere stuffed with spotlight-seeking and self-serving stunts, this soft-spoken spender proved sometimes the richest role isn't scripted, it's selfless. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.